talked about a couple of weeks ago about the meaning of life and where did we come from. I want to continue that thought and talk about, well, why are we here? So what is it that you're looking for out of life? What are you expecting? See, so many people never find contentment with their lives because they're expecting things that life just doesn't deliver. It cannot deliver them. I've watched people and I talk to people. I've answered messages from people. And, you know, they just can't be happy, they tell me, unless something changes. I have to be taller. I have had people write to me actually say, I want to be shorter. Because I tower over all my friends. I've had people in my past I've seen, like my sister has beautiful curly hair. She spent her entire time straightening it. And I've seen other ladies who have very straight hair spend all their time curling it. Some people want more hair. I'm losing mine. Some people want a different color hair. As I glance over at Lori quickly. But it's not, it looks like, you know, nothing is good the way it is. And if something will just change, then I can be happy. There are people that decide that it can't be happy unless life goes absolutely perfectly. Despite the fact that it can't act perfectly throughout life, they expect everything else to be perfect. They want no stress. They want no concerns. They'd want no effort. And then I'll be happy. You know, the American dream. People want to pursue riches and possessions. Life would be so much better if we had a bigger house, a newer car, nicer clothes. The list goes on. Some people chase after fun. They use drugs and alcohol because they don't have to face stresses while they're high. They can pretend like they don't exist. They do whatever feels good to them at the moment, and they don't want to think about responsibilities. They want to be entertained. They want to escape the realities of life. They get immersed in movies and books and some people just want to better themselves. They want to work hard, study hard, put lots of effort in, but without any particular goal in mind to achieve. They get excited about something new, but they don't have a use for it. And if you think about it, isn't that what we have in society? We have more wealth and possessions today than centuries ago. Things that centuries ago they couldn't even imagine. Not long ago, I was suddenly realized, you know, when I was growing up, they talked about, you know, these video phones and how great it was going to be. And, you know, carry one around in a pocket. They couldn't imagine that back 50, 60 years ago. Think about the things that we have. And people are still not happy. We have more ways to have fun today than you could do in a lifetime. And people are still not happy. We have endless opportunities to better ourselves. And they're still not happy. Why is our society so filled with people who are dissatisfied with life? Part of the problem is that what people pursue are things that are really not worth anything. We're going to go, and if you want to mark your Bibles in Ecclesiastes, we're going to hit this book repeatedly today. Because that is what this book's about. What is the purpose of life? In chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes, and then starting in verse 2, it says, "Vanities of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What advantage does a man have in all his work, which he does under the sun?" Everything that seems to be about life is worthless effort. That's what vanity means. Said many times, one of the definitions of vanity is blowing into the wind to change the course of the wind. You could do it all day. The wind's going to blow the way the wind's going to blow. That's worthless effort. And that's what he's talking about here. See, some people chase after pleasures. And look at chapter 2, verse 1. "I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility." Why? Well, pleasures don't last. It doesn't really change life. He also tried work in verse 11 of chapter 2. "Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done, and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all that was vanity and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun." You can work real hard to build something up. You know how fast it takes for somebody to tear it down? And even if you don't, you know, somebody doesn't actually tear it down, just leave it there for a little bit. The world will tear it down, bit by bit. Things decay. How about education? Verse 21 of chapter 2. When there is a man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, then he gives his legacy to someone who has not labored with them. This too is vanity and a great evil. Guy who works all his life, builds up this great company or whatever, uses all his skills, he's got to leave it to somebody because you don't stay here in the world. And the guy who inherits it really doesn't care because it wasn't his company, it wasn't his skills, and everything falls apart. So you just live for the moment. Chapter 3, verse 19. "For the fate of the sons of men and the fate of beasts are the same. As one dies, so dies the other. Indeed, they all have the same breath. There is no advantage for man over beast, for all is vanity." It's still useless. You might live for the moment, but what do you actually accomplish? In chapter 5 and verse 7, trying to escape, I just want to get away from it all. "For in many dreams and in many words, there's emptiness. Rather fear God." You know how many types of dreams there are out in the world? People want to do something else. When I was young, I wanted to walk the Appalachian Trail. Still would like to do that. Not going to make it. Can't carry a backpack anymore. But that was one of my dreams. But you know what? It was a useless one. Walk that whole trail, you know what I've accomplished? Nothing. Some of you pursue wealth. Chapter 5, verse 10. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with his income. This too is vanity. How much money do you need to be happy with the money you have? When I was growing up, I remember my teenage years, a man who, took us to football games every once in a while. His goal was he was going to make $1 million. He made it. Made it by the time he was in his 30s. So he decided he needed $10 million. No matter how much you want, there's always more. And so that becomes an endless pursuit. Or looking for something new. In chapter 6 and verse 9, what the eye sees is better than what the soul desires. This too is futility and a striving after wind. There's all sorts of things, all those new gadgets out there. I want one. New car. New this, new that. There's endless. And you'll never be satisfied. And for some, if you go all the way to chapter 11, it's endless youth that people seem to pursue. So remove grief and anger from your heart and take away pain from your body. Behold, childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. No matter how much you want to hang on to your youth, it's going to go away. It's just the way life is. See, the problem is that people are trying to get something out of life for which it wasn't designed to deliver. It would be like trying to bake dinner in your clothes dryer. Or eating a meal with a pitchfork and a shovel. Or cutting your grass with a pair of scissors. You could do those things, but it wouldn't work very well. It isn't that life has no purpose. The problem is that people are wanting the wrong things from life. See, God means for us to be happy. If we go back to Ecclesiastes again, let's go back to the beginning of the book. We've been skipping over all the things that were not working. Now let's go back and look at the things that do work. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and verse 24, it says, there's nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I've seen is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? For to a person who is good in his sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. And the verse continues on. But I want you to notice what makes a contented life. You have food on the table, you got enough to drink. You know that the work you did was good. And you know that you're with God. And you know that God's blessed you. Now that's a really simple life. And it's something every one of us can achieve. In fact, I would guarantee you, everyone here has achieved it. You have food on the table. You have plenty to drink. You got a job, and I suspect most of you do a really good job with your job. And I hope you know that God's with you and that God is blessing you. So why is it that we have to work? Sometimes, especially when things get really difficult, we start asking ourselves that. Why do I have to go to work? Well, Ecclesiastes chapter 3, and in verse 10. I've seen the tasks which God has given the sons of men with which to occupy themselves. How many times do kids get in trouble when they have nothing to do? How many times grown-ups get in trouble when they have nothing to do? Okay. One of the reasons God requires that we work is to keep us out of trouble. And in verse 11, he says he's made everything appropriate in its time. He has also set eternity in their hearts. Yet so that man cannot find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. One of the reasons why we work is so that we might realize there's more to life than this world. He means for us to yearn for something more. But he also says in verse 12, he says, I know that there's nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor. It is a gift of God. Here's another reason why we work, so that we can do good. It's not just that, hey, I want to accumulate as much money as well. God's given us the ability to help other people, to do what is right. To aid others. Because when you help somebody else, you know how much it makes you feel? There's this little warm tingling inside that, hey, I did something nice. And some people look at it and say, but bad things still happen. Yeah. Verse 14, I know that everything God does will remain forever. There is nothing to add to it, and there is nothing to take away from it, for God so worked it that men should fear him. It reminds us that we need God. This world's not perfect. We ought to know that. We shouldn't expect it. Not perfection here. But it says we shouldn't be looking for where perfection's found, which is in heaven. And so what it comes down to, in verse 22, it says, I've seen that nothing is better than that a man should be happy in his activities, for that is his lot. For who will bring him to see what will occur after him? Find contentment in the now. You know how many people tell themselves, I'll be happy when something else changes? And Solomon is saying, be happy now. Why wait? Because you don't know what the future is going to hold. Think about how much happiness you wasted because you want to be happy later and you could have been happy now. We go back to verse 7 in chapter 5. For in many dreams and in many words there is emptiness. Rather fear God. Dreams are nice. But dreams by themselves are empty. In verse 18 of chapter 5, here is what I've seen to be good and fitting, to eat, to drink, to enjoy oneself in all one's labor, in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life, which God has given him, for this is his reward. Life is just too short to waste. As I get older, I realize I'm actually plotting things, saying I got about this many years left to get things done. Why waste the few years you have being miserable? Now, some people, if you happen to be blessed with wealth, well, great. Verse 19 of chapter 5. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he has also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is a gift of God, for he will often not consider the years of his life, because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. So if you're blessed by God, you have wealth and you got things to do, and you enjoy life. It's a gift. But at the same time, realize wealth is not the key to happiness. Take a look at verse 9 of chapter 6. For what the eye sees is better than what the soul desires. This too is futility and a striving after wind. But what we need to understand is we don't control the future. Life is completely uncertain. In chapter 8, verse 7, no one knows what will happen. Who can tell him when it will happen? I have no idea who's going to end up being president. Should I hook my happiness on whoever gets into the White House? No. I don't know what the future is going to hold. I don't know if there's going to be economic success or if this country is going to go down. Should I hook my happiness on worrying about what might happen? There's one thing, though, I am certain about. I know what happens to the righteous. In chapter 8, verse 12, it says, although the sinner does evil 100 times and may lengthen his life, still I know that it will be well for those who fear God, who fear him openly. I know what happens to wicked people. They end up having misery, usually. But even if they don't, I know what happens to the righteous, and that's guaranteed. Life is going to get better because we're not staying in this world. And so he concludes in verse 15 of chapter 8. So I commend pleasure, for there is nothing good for a man under the sun except to eat and to drink and to be merry. This will stand by him in his toils throughout the days of his life, which God has given him under the sun. What does he conclude? Have fun. Just enjoy. I don't know what the future is holding. But I'm not in the future. I'm here. Amen. Have fun. There are things which are out of our control in chapter 9. Starting with verse 7. Go then and eat your bread in happiness, and drink your wine with a cheerful heart. For God has already provided your works. Approved your works. Let your clothes be white at all time, and let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the woman whom you love all the days of your fleeting life, which is given to you under the sun. For this is your reward in life, and in your toil in which you have labored under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, for there is no activity, nor planning, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in Sheol, where you're going. There's so much in life that's out of our control. But we do have some things that are in our control. So enjoy what you have. Now it means that, you know, hey, I know there's going to be bad times. I know that, you know, the plumbing gets clogged up And it gets, you know, broken. This happened to me twice this last week, the week before. Now, I know bad things are going to happen. So what do you do? In chapter 11, look at verse 6. Sow your seed in the morning, and do not be idle in the evening, for you do not know whether morning or evening sowing will succeed, or whether both of them alike will be good. I have no idea what's going to happen. So what do? I don't be idle. I do different things. I know some of you were concerned. I mentioned that, hey, we're running short of funds. We had reserves. We're running short here. Some people have been as concerned about me. There's a reason why I do three jobs. Now, I work this full-time, but I have two other part-time jobs I keep busy with. Now, they don't supply enough money, but they get me by. I don't know which is going to succeed. That's fine. Life's uncertain. But whichever works, I'm still going to be able to preach the gospel. Now, because of preaching for so long, I let the word out, and I got a whole bunch of people asking if they can help support. More than I was expecting. Whether that comes through or not, we'll see. But people are at least interested. I'm thinking, good. I don't have to go off and get another part-time job. But I'll do that if I have to. Because life's uncertain. Okay. Verse 7 of chapter 11. The light is pleasant and is good to the eye to see the sun. Indeed, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all. And let him remember that the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything that is to come will be futility. You know bad days are going to come. So again, the sun is out right now. Have fun. Don't sit there worrying about it's going to get cloudy and gloomy again. That's why he says, you know, basically, why ruin a good day with the dread of the future? Especially when the future is uncertain and it is a vanity to try to predict it. And about that youth, again, he says in verse 9, rejoice, young men, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and desires of your eyes. Yet know that God will bring you into judgment for all these things. So remove grief and anger from your heart, and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you will say, I have no delight in them. If you're young, have fun. You're young enough that you want to go try something, go try it. You know, oh, I don't know what career to pick. Well, pick one. If you like it, great. If you don't like it, hey, you got time to change careers. I worked in a library. I hot walked horses. I worked in a nursing home for 2 years. I worked in a cafeteria and to move food around, wash dishes. I worked in a grocery store. I did a lot of programming in my years. And I'm preaching. Couldn't make up my mind, could I? No, actually, I had a fairly good idea where I wanted to go. But I tried different things. I found out, there's a reason why I don't wash dishes. I don't like it. I'll do it. But I've found what I like and what I don't like. When you're young, it's time to experiment. Follow the impulses. But always remember that you still have to give an account to God. It's not a time to forget that God's watching us and we still are responsible. But you know how much there is in life that you still can have fun with? So within the guidelines of what God says, have fun. See, man's duty in chapter 12, verse 13, the conclusion when all has been heard is, fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Our duty is to serve God. And in Matthew chapter 6, Matthew chapter 6 and in verse 24, so no one can serve two masters, for he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. Why are we here? To serve God. I can't serve two masters. There has to be one overall purpose in my life, and that's to serve God. And true happiness results when I put God first in my life. In Matthew chapter 6, down in verse 31. Do not worry then, saying, what will we eat, or what will we drink, or what will we wear for clothing? For the Gentiles eagerly seek all these things, for your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. I was having a discussion with a young man this morning. His girlfriend wanted him to skip church so that he could go to a wedding. I said, well, can you figure out some way to go to church and go to the wedding? It took him a little while, but he figured a way. Put God first. Everything else will settle out and around it. But make that your rock. Make that your item of stability. Now, God gave us laws. And those laws are based on the concept of love. In Matthew 22 and in verse 36, teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law? And he said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. And therein lies the core problem. Most people live life with the idea that life's all about them. But did you notice the core of everything that God has given us is love God and love my neighbor. It's all outward. It's not about me. It's about God. It's about my fellow man. God designed life to be about serving God and our fellow man. Loving God means obeying him. Take a look at John 14. John 14 and verse 21. He who has my commandments and keeps them is the one who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and will disclose myself to him. These laws make life better. We serve God because we love him. We serve God by keeping His commandments. And those commandments, in turn, then make our lives better. Take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 10 and in verse 12. Now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require from you? But to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all His ways, and to love Him, and to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the Lord's commandments and His statutes, which are commanding you today for your good. When you follow after God's law, you know what happens with life? Life gets better. You have fewer worries. See, I don't have to worry about the police knocking on my door in the middle of the night. They have done it a couple times, but for other reasons. But I don't have to worry about it because I'm doing what's right. When I'm driving down the road, I see a cop on the side. I don't have to suddenly wonder, am I speeding? Is he going to pull me over? No, I drive the speed limit. I might check just to make sure I'm within it, but I drive the speed limit. Okay, life gets better. And happiness comes when we choose to have a contented life. In the middle of our scripture reading, in 1 Timothy, actually at the beginning of the reading, 1 Timothy chapter 6. And starting with verse 6. But godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. For we have brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare, and many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. And some, by longing for it, wander away from the faith and pierce themselves with many griefs. See, when we're pursuing the wrong things, just when we think we have obtained it, we tend to lose it. Going over to Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, starting with verse 15. Then he said to them, beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. And he told them a parable, saying, the land of a rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops? Then he said, this is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods, and I'll say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your soul is required of you. And now who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. What are you doing with your life? Are you endlessly chasing after things that just won't last? Why don't you give your life some meaning and serve God? I hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here tonight or this day who's not yet a child of God, we leave that opportunity for you. For those who are children of God, would like to praise your brother on your behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.